Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, July 15th, 2022. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Kiwanis Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Ryan Grimm, Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief of The Intercept, sometimes host of Rising for the Hill. Also, later in the program, to provide us a streaming movie, Matthew Film Guy will be here. Also on the program, Texas suing to stop federal law which protects the lives of mothers. Indiana AG investigating a doctor who performed an abortion for a 10-year-old rape victim. Manchin pulls the plug on his own tax and climate proposals. Surprise. Secret Service deleted text messages from Jan 6, while a Metro Police witness corroborates, supposedly, some of that story by the other witness, Hutchinson, about Trump grabbing the wheel, the steering wheel on Jan 6. Meanwhile, Republicans quash a Democratic bill to protect the right of people to cross state line for abortion and reproductive care. As the House to vote on abortion protections, they've also begun to move on an assault weapons ban. Starbucks Workers United files a new series of complaints on store closings, this time that Starbucks is using to stop organizing. Joe Biden in Israel announces an additional $300 million in aid for Palestinians. The Sri Lankan president resigns in absentia in the wake of massive protests and at least 23 dead when a Russian cruise missile hits a wedding hall and shopping center in a city far, far away from eastern Ukraine. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. It's Casual Friday. As you can see, I am wearing a soft-collared shirt.
And soft collar.
Emma.
Yeah, look at that.
Vigeland is also wearing a soft-collared shirt.
I'm glad you didn't go with what you were thinking of.
Well, it's going to be pretty rough. By the time we get to the fun half, things are going to get pretty ugly. I understand that you...
I revealed too much.
You revealed too much yesterday on the program, and we'll save it for the fun half, as it were, but... Boy, oh boy, that was an unforced error.
It really was, and I've been known to have said unforced errors in my life. I've tried to avoid these kinds of pitfalls on the show before, but I slipped up yesterday. I messed up, and
yep.
I revealed my college nickname.
Yep, that sounds like a huge mistake.
Yeah.
We'll get there. My sense is, based upon just how many IMs we've gotten about it already, that this will blow over within, 5 or 6 years.
Damn it.
I wouldn't worry about it.
Jesus.
Let's get to this quickly. I mean, we are now...
Am I having an issue with my camera right now? Okay. All right. All right. Just making sure.
We have now moved into, in this country, in an incredibly... I mean, the pace at which this is moving now, the overturning of Roe v. Wade was not, as if it wasn't enough, was not just a move that has implications for people who need abortion care or need reproductive care, health care, broadly speaking, being prevented from doing so in at least 13 states and then 26 states and then maybe in other states as well. It was a signal to the right in this country, which is, let's be clear, half of Donald Trump's votes came from self-identified evangelical Christians. And the remaining half may not identify as evangelical Christians, but certainly a significant portion of them have a fundamentalist worldview. And we are seeing now the implications of that, not just in the case of abortion, but in the case of protecting a woman's or a person who is facing sort of a potential life-threatening situation because of a denial of abortion care, being assaulted. We're seeing children being assaulted, and it's going to expand from there. Make no doubt about it. And also understand what we're watching now is the right, their lies about their agenda when it came to the protecting the babies with abortion are starting to show itself, that they were always lies. It was never about protecting the innocent baby. That was a second order result of a linchpin in their mind to maintaining and edifying the patriarchy, but really the patriarchy is a second order of thing. They don't perceive it as a patriarchy. God's will. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, as evidenced by the fact of their response to a baby, I would call a 10-year-old, a child, a baby, closer to that than definitely an adult or a woman, their response to her pregnancy via rape and denying that. Like, that exposes their hypocrisy even more than anything.
That, but there's more and more that I think we're going to see in the coming days. We have clips of it. Stuff that is far afield from it, but it is unleashed. We got a clip of someone from the FEC in a hearing just to find out, like, what do they call it? A preemptive hearing. I can't remember what the actual term. We'll go over it soon. But just to get a ruling on, can I spend money on this? And one of the Christian conservatives on the FEC doesn't even look at the issue of the funding as much as the behavior. Leaving a child for a week with a babysitter on when you're going on a trip. I'm not kidding. We will get to there. But this is going, in other words, it is over. They're not hiding anymore. So understand, they've been lying this whole time. Not just about the children or the innocent babies.
They're lying for the Lord, as you said before
lying
the show.
Lying for the Lord.
Because it doesn't really necessarily... It's the same reason why they supported Donald Trump, right? Even though there was a lot of talk in the lead up to the 2016 election. How can evangelicals support this guy? He is an adulterer. He is gluttonous. He is everything that they're supposed to stand against. But it doesn't really matter, right? It was the same reason that Mike Pence stood beside him. It was all about... the lie or what the ends justify the means for them, which is the patriarchy, the Christian fundamentalism being enshrined into law. And Trump followed through with that. And we're seeing it in the Supreme Court.
Yep.
Now they got what they wanted.
All right. So with that said, let's look at Jim Jordan. This is a guy I remember very, very concerned about protecting children. Unless they're wrestlers on his team and they're being molested by somebody.
Then we cover that up.
That one narrow case, not so much. But here he is on CNN. Of course, all he needs is a headline from one of his right-wing outfits to to take his marching orders. And it's hard to believe that the right did not anticipate the idea that in Ohio itself, there are at least, according to in 2020, there were 52 children under the age of 15 who required an abortion in 2020. So this is happening four or five times a month in Ohio. In Ohio. Victims of rape in Ohio. And Jim Jordan from Ohio couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe that it was possibly true. And part of this is, understand, they don't care. At the end of the day, they don't care because this is the Lord's will. Here is Jim Jordan.
Why did you delete the tweet?
Well, because we learned that this illegal alien did this heinous crime. So we deleted the tweet.
Did you apologize for to the girl and the family for suggesting it was a lie?
I never doubted the child. I was responding to a headline from your profession, the news profession, which happens all the time on Twitter. Doubted Joe Biden, which is usually a smart thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, here it is. And so he's saying we deleted the tweet where he was, questioning the story when he found out that it was an illegal immigrant. They're going to do anything they can to divert from the attention of what the real story is here. And the reason why they're going to do that is because their agenda is now really fully exposed. And they're going to town, and there is no holding back. And they are trying to provide a soft landing for the 60-70% of this country, maybe a little bit less, 60%, 70%, that does not want to live under a religious fundamentalist regime.
It's like marketing 101. I mean, I'm rewatching Mad Men for the millionth time. If you don't like what's being said, change the conversation.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly what they do, right? It's one, now it's about the dirty illegal immigrants who are criminals coming over the border, and Biden's policies are causing that. Oh, wait, this happens. Child rape, assault happens, and the pregnancy could happen. In any other instance, okay, now it's about the veracity of the story. We're going to cast aspersions on it, even though the Indianapolis Star and what was it, the Columbus Dispatch, also both verified this story. And now it's about this, it's about that. They need to operate on a different playing field because the reality of what they support is not, as you say, Sam, not supported by the vast majority of Americans in this country. So they have to make it about anything else.
We're talking to Ryan Grimm in a few about this story and more. First, a message from our sponsor today. Ladies and gentlemen, today is July 15th, and that means that you have the 16th, the 17th, and then the 18th until midnight to avail yourself of this deal. Sunset Lake Sabade has a wide variety of Sabade tinctures, as you know, because we have told you for, well, months they've added the citrus and the mint flavors. They have the original. They have upped it from some of the 750 milligrams. You can get a 3,000 milligram or 6,000 milligrams, so you don't have to take, a bunch of different droppers. But there's something for everybody here. You have trouble going to sleep? Try their Sabade and melatonin tincture before bed for a better night's sleep. They have their high potency, like I say, 3,000 and 6,000 milligram tinctures, perfect for catching a mellow buzz and reducing stress after a long day at work. But if you find you get a little bit too mellow, you can drop down to the 750. And starting all this week, but for the next 3.5 days, all Sabade tinctures will be 35% off with the coupon code Tincture, T-I-N-C-T-U-R-E. Now, usually, it's Leftist Best will get you 20% off on all of their products. But if you want that extra 15%, 35% off using the code Tincture. I've been using CBD.
CBD.
Yeah, shoot. I don't want to reveal too much about what's going on, but I'm going to be having my kids for unplanned extra amount of time. And literally when I heard that, the first thing I did was just take a little bit ahead of the tincture.
Got to calm down.
Got to calm down a little bit. But also I use it regularly for sleep. And sometimes after a meal, Sunset Lake Sabade is a majority employee-owned business. They have donated more than $26,000 last year to the anti-drug war organizations. They've done it to animal shelters. They've done it for union strike funds in the past, nature conservation, food shelves, refugee resettlement organizations, Innocence Project, Give Directly. Again, starting all this week, I should say, all Sabade tinctures will be 35% off with the coupon code Tincture. Visit sunsetlakesabade.com to try these amazing new products and take advantage of the sale while it lasts. Sale ends July 18th. All right, let's play this clip, and we'll get to Grimmin in just a minute. I want to play this clip of Eric Solwell. Again, with this point, this clip number two, this point that the right is lying about and have been lying for years about this thing because they know fundamentally, no pun intended,
yeah, right,
that the vast majority of the country does not subscribe to their Christian fundamentalist worldview. That we don't want to live this way. And their imposition of their religious values on all of us is going to get more extreme and worse. It's just, and I'm not even sure what we're going to be able to do to stop it at this point. But the floodgates are open. Once Roe v. Wade passed, the floodgates are open. And here is how they are trying to reconcile it when they're being questioned directly. They pretend like 10-year-olds don't get raped and don't need abortions. They pretend that, well, maybe it's not even an abortion if we think it's okay. Here is the best example of how you know this is not even about a principle of life or not life. I mean, we already know it's not about life or even innocent life versus non-innocent life, right? Because they have no problem with capital punishment. They have no problem with danger to the mother.
Right.
But
no
here's
exceptions.
How you can see that it doesn't even have anything to do with any of that. It has to do with just their religious values they want to impose. Here is this is the House Judiciary Committee hearing. Representative Eric Swalwell is questioning Catherine Glenn Foster, the president and CEO of Americans United for Life. Here we go. Listen to this.
Gentleman yields back, Mrs. Swalwell.
Thank you. Ms. Foster, you think a 10-year-old would choose to carry?
In the 10-year-old case, first of all, the Ohio...
My question is, would a 10-year-old choose to carry a baby?
In the Ohio case, the Ohio Attorney General said that abortion would have been justified.
Focus on the question, please. Would a 10-year-old choose to carry a baby?
I cannot.
Do you think a 10-year-old should choose to carry a baby?
I believe it would probably impact her life. And so, therefore, it would fall under any exception and would not be an abortion.
Wait. It would not be an abortion if a 10-year-old with her parents made the decision not to have a baby that was the result of a rape?
If a 10-year-old became pregnant as a result of rape and it was threatening her life, then that's not an abortion. So it would not fall under any abortion restriction in our nation.
Ms. Warbelow, are you familiar with disinformation?
Yes, I am.
Did you just hear some disinformation?
Yes, I heard some very significant disinformation.
Why don't you tell me about that?
Hold on. Like, I don't even think, like, you know, to call this disinformation, is not even doing it justice.
It's stupid Washington speak.
It is conflating what you, I mean, this is not disinformation. This is fundamentalist religious, because he won't say it. Because he's afraid to say it. But this is religious fundamentalism being imposed upon people. This is theocracy. An abortion is a medical procedure. You don't get to decide if the morals line up in the way that you like.
A kidney transplant doesn't count if it's a 10-year-old, right? It's, you got to call it something different.
Well, the thing is, it's like, that's not, it's it, the point is, it's not even that they're 10. It's that this woman thinks that as long as it can be justified morally in her mind and in the church's mind, then it does not exist as a medical procedure or any type of factual thing. It is God saying, you get a pass here. That's not the way this works. But understand, this is not misinformation. Misinformation is when you deliberately tell people something that is untrue to deflect from it. But she thinks it's true. She thinks it's true because the invisible man, and it's a man for her, I promise you, in the sky has given word to their minions that this is a wash. It's not a sin because of the calculations we've done in our religion.
Because it's sufficiently brutal. Yeah.
This is just like stunning. She's not getting up in front of Congress and delivering misinformation. She's getting up in Congress and delivering God's word, period, as far as she's concerned. And that is now the law of the land, according to her.
It would not be an abortion if a 10-year-old with her parents made the decision not to have a baby that was the result of a rape?
If a 10-year-old became pregnant as a result of rape and it was threatening her life, then that's not an abortion. So it would not fall under any abortion restriction in our nation.
Ms. Warbelow, are you familiar with disinformation?
Yes, I am.
We should be clear. This is a clip right here, a cut to later get a witness.
Yeah.
Information?
Yes, I heard some very significant disinformation.
Why don't you tell me about that?
Yes, an abortion is a procedure. It's a medical procedure that individuals undergo for a wide range of circumstances, including because they have been sexually assaulted, raped in the case of the 10-year-old. It doesn't matter whether or not there is a statutory exemption. It is still a medical procedure that is understood to be an abortion. Beyond that, I think it's also important to note that there is no exception for the life or the health of the mother in the Ohio law. That's why that 10-year-old had to cross state lines in order to receive an abortion.
Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Warbelow.
But this is why, to me, like, they'll lie, as you say. They will lie in order to get the law of the land implemented in the way that they want it to be, which is their perception of what God wants. And so, like, I know I've said this point 400 times on this program, but I just want to hammer it home. It is important in certain contexts to highlight the brutality and the fact that there aren't exemptions for rape or incest in instances like this. I understand that it's valuable to highlight the brutality for Democratic partisan purposes and for the purposes of those hearings. But largely in the broader context, on the battlefield of trying to combat these religious fundamentalists, they will lie no matter what. When they are presented with an extreme case such as this, a 10-year-old being raped and having to have an abortion, they will lie to get around it, saying, oh, it doesn't count. It doesn't count because I decided it doesn't count. But the statutes and the laws that they support don't back up that context. So you got to just always make the broader case for abortion, not just in these extreme circumstances, because it's not just for 10-year-olds who've been raped. It's for women that don't have the opportunity or to leave their husband, and they're worried that they're in an abusive situation and they may not be able to go back, or because they're just not ready in their life. Like, they have other career things that they want to prove. So I just always want to bring it back to that larger context, because I don't want it to be pigeonholed as just a necessary procedure because of all these other layers of evil.
If they had brought that woman, here's the thing. That woman has been saying, I'm sure, the same thing for years and years and years and believing it. And if they had brought this woman up to testify 6 months ago, you would hear all the Glenn Kesslers and all the other people in the mainstream media, and you'd hear some of the liberals, like, this is the fanatic fringe. They only the fanatic fringe believe this. But the fact is, they never put that woman out in front, because the people doing the covering for her, they're the ones who are lying. They know what the intent is. She doesn't even have the capacity to lie. If she had the capacity to lie, she would have come up with a better answer there.
Yeah, parsing this with pedantry just helps them. It helps their fundamentalism, because, like, it's all about the subtext and their larger project.
There were other Republicans out in front who were doing all the lying, and in the political class, and they knew exactly what they were lying for. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Ryan Grimm.
Cheapest one out there.
We are back. Sam Seder, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report, joining us in a suit because
is the cheapest one out there. Ryan Grimm, cheapest guest we could possibly get.
He is the.
That's how he prefers to be identified.
He is the DC bureau chief for The Intercept and also a host on Rising at the Hill. Right? Is that right?
Yeah, on Friday. So I did it Friday. So. How's my hair looking?
Yeah, you're looking good.
It looks really convincing.
You gotta just
does it look convincing?
Shift that a little bit.
Yeah,
move it around a little bit.
Don't mess with it too much, or it's gonna fall off.
All right, we're gonna play this for you, this clip, because I want to talk really about what happened with the press and this sort of like bigger thing. Because you've been at this now for I don't know 15 years too, probably at least, and. The dynamic that's captured here is, I think, like I am. Well, let's play this clip here. This is Swalwell at the House Judiciary Committee interviewing Catherine Glenn Foster. She is the CEO and president of Americans United for Life.
Gentleman yields back, Mrs. Swalwell.
Thank you, Ms. Foster. You think a 10-year-old would choose to carry?
In the 10-year-old case, first of all, the Ohio...
You know, my question is, would a 10-year-old choose to carry a baby?
In the Ohio case, the Ohio Attorney General said that abortion would have been justified.
Focus on the question, please. Would a 10-year-old choose to carry a baby?
I cannot...
Do you think a 10-year-old should choose to carry a baby?
I believe it would probably impact her life, and so therefore, it would fall under any exception and would not be an abortion.
Wait, it would not be an abortion if a 10-year-old with her parents made the decision not to have a baby that was the result of a rape?
If a 10-year-old became pregnant as a result of rape and it was threatening her life, then that's not an abortion. So it would not fall under any abortion restriction in our nation.
Ms. Warbelow, I'm familiar with disinformation.
We don't need any more. So she is saying that if it falls within an exemption, which it doesn't, but put that aside, and a 10-year-old can only get pregnant by rape. They don't have the ability to give consent in any way. I'm not sure that necessarily another 10-year-old, if they were to have impregnated her, would be treated. But a 10-year-old girl cannot give consent for sex. But the idea that if there's an exemption, it's not an abortion. Like this to me sort of reveals the fundamentalist underpinnings of everything that is going on with this stuff.
There's some Salem witch trial type stuff here where they, you define things first in a way that the outcome is then produces that thing that you've defined. Like, the famous case of like, if the witch sinks, if the woman sinks, then they were innocent. If they float, they're guilty. And so therefore they're a witch. Then they end up dying, either way, which is also, this stuff is not just historical nonsense. Like this Alito, cited the people who wrote the laws around witch trials. Like literally he cited those specific people. I think that's right. So what they've done is they've defined abortion as a thing that is illegal. Anything that they're saying is legal falls outside of that and is therefore not an abortion. It reminds me of Todd Akin. When Todd Akin in what was 2012 said that a woman can't get pregnant if it's a legitimate rape, because the body has a way of shutting that whole thing down. And so it reverse defines out what rape is. So you can't get pregnant by rape because the female body, designed by the Lord, shuts that whole thing down, was his quote. And then therefore, if you're pregnant, it was not by rape. And that's what they're really going for. Like, it sounds insane, but it has a logic behind it. And the logic is, any woman who's pregnant, therefore, deserve to be pregnant, because undeserving people just don't get pregnant. Because in order to stand up that logic, then you have to start saying completely insane things. Like, if it's a quote unquote legitimate rape, you can't get pregnant biologically. And so that's where they wind up in the insane areas, or saying something like, well, if it's a 10-year-old, that's not an abortion.
I mean, that's the problem is they are trying to translate religious fundamentalism doctrine into
biology,
into right. logic,
the real world,
into right. logic, into real right. world, into logic. And it comes out sounding insane. And we should note, Todd Akin didn't even make it to the election, right? Like, I mean, this gives you like a sense of like how far we have traveled in 10 years in this country. And, I was saying in the lead up to that clip, I was saying like, that woman is not put out in front 6 months ago, or if she was, you would hear everyone from, like Tim Carney to Kessler to everybody in the Beltway media, from the right all the way. You can go deep into the liberals, even saying like, that's not fair. She's a fringe character. She's not going to be in charge of any of this stuff. Blah blah blah. And then the Republicans who know that 60-70% of the country are not fundamentalists, they don't want to live under a fundamentalist regime, would come out and say like, you can't listen to her. She's not. But those days are over now. It feels like it's with Roe v. Wade gone. It feels like all bets are off.
Yes. And because they're setting policy. And so one thing that you've heard, and we talked about this on Rising this morning, actually, one thing you've heard from Ohio Republicans has been, well, look, actually, if you look at the exceptions that are written into the Ohio law, it's possible that this 10-year-old actually could have gotten a legal abortion. And so it reminded me of this. Do you remember the Poland case where two young women in Poland died a few years ago after a Polish anti-abortion law went into effect, and hundreds of thousands of people poured into the streets because these women had ectopic pregnancies. The hospitals refused to treat them, worried about criminal liability. They died. And then, you know, the country, you know, even this, you know, deeply conservative Catholic country, you know, there's an uprising against the laws. And the reaction from the government was exactly the same as it was in Ohio, which was, well, if you look at the very fine print of the way that we wrote this law, it was the doctors were wrong. Like, they actually probably could have legally carried out that procedure and probably been legally okay. So therefore, it's not the fault of the abortion law. So leave us alone. But that didn't work with the crowds that poured into the streets. And you're going to continue to see that. And so, you know, fortunately, this 10-year-old was able to get over to Indiana and get an abortion, you know, quick enough. We still don't know, you know, what kind of damage is done to the child's body just for that short amount of time. But if it goes into 20 weeks, you know, it's causing enormous amounts of internal damage for somebody that young. But we're going to see, you know, further cases, you know, similar to this, where women die or where young girls die. And you'll hear the medical professionals say that because of the law, they didn't carry out a procedure that they knew could have saved this person. And then you'll have Republicans say, well, you're wrong. Fact check. Actually, you know, if you look at the intent mentioned in the congressional hearing, blah, 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 probably. And the Ohio AG only says probably, doesn't say it would have been legally, only say probably. But functionally, it means that right. These procedures aren't going to be carried out, because if there's a risk of criminal liability, you know, a lot of medical providers just aren't going to take that risk. And so that's what we're going to wind up with: a lot of dead people. And then each time a disgusting social media fight over whether or not, you know, within the law, the doctor actually could have had some defense if they carried out the procedure. If the case of Poland is any example, that explanation is not going to work for the public.
Well, I mean, we can hope, right? The thing is that the conservative movement behaves with the respective urgency of a minoritarian party, right? And they understand that they have to do a full court press to get what they want implemented because of the like nature of the polling surrounding an issue like this. And you mentioned the doctors and the chilling effect that it has on their practices. The whole the right wing media narrative surrounding the abortion provided to this 10-year-old victim is they're trying a bunch of different things, right? The rapist was an illegal immigrant, so it's Biden's fault. But what they're also doing as well is that they're targeting the doctor in and of herself, right? So the Indiana AG says that they're going to pursue some sort of investigation into the doctor because she did not report the abortion, which is a crazy sentence in and of itself, but she did. She did. But, you know, so we were talking about this on the show yesterday when Sam wasn't here, and someone wrote in and said, you know, the Dr. Tiller baby killer case was not something that they learned a lesson from. They're trying to replicate that. And it just sent a chill down my spine, because in a sense, it's true, right? They're going to try to demonize any doctor that even comes close to performing a procedure like this. And so if they do, they're damned. If they don't and someone dies from an ectopic pregnancy, they're damned as well. So I guess I'm just curious what your take is on the way that they're going to go after doctors in the coming months, right. Years.
And, yeah. Right. They did learn a lesson from Tiller the baby killer. But, you know, basically, they learned that their movement could get away with it. You know, it's stunning to think that barely 10 years after that, and that he wasn't the only abortion provider that they assassinated. And you would think that a movement that extreme, whose ecosystem was not by accident producing, you know, these assassins, you know, would have driven itself into irrelevancy. Instead, it won. at the Supreme Court. And so you're right. And I think that it ties into the other goal, which is shutting down clinics and just making it impossible to get abortion. So if you are a 10-year-old and you are a victim of rape and incest, and let's say the law is written in even clearer way that says, you know what, you are allowed to have an abortion performed under these circumstances, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. The goal is that you have nowhere to get it, that the clinics are shut down and that doctors don't perform them. I think the number of doctors who perform abortions is down. It's under 3,000 at this point. It might be substantially under 3,000 by now. Maybe somebody has the exact number there, but it's their goal is to get that down smaller and smaller and smaller, so that there are people who live, that can go thousands of, they can go 1,000 miles and not find an abortion provider. Like that's the goal. And then you can be nice and liberal with the exceptions that you write into the law, because you've undermined the structure of the healthcare provider network that is needed. And that's what's unique in some ways about abortion politics, because, with prohibition, when they flipped the switch and re-legalized alcohol, bars were all open the next day, because a lot of them never really shut down and everybody's still making liquor. And it's not that hard to put a bar together and put a restaurant together, put a liquor store together. But getting the medical training necessary to run a safe abortion clinic is a serious thing that requires investment in infrastructure and institutional memory. And they're trying to eliminate all of that.
I want to get your sense too on, I guess let's stay with this case just more for one more moment, because it also really shows how our media, what has happened in our media over the past 20 years is almost uniquely temporally ill-suited to cover this story, right? And I don't mean this specific story, but we're going to see stories like this for all we know, there have been 3 or 4 other, or 5 or 10 or 15 mm-hmm. or 20, other cases like this that have just taken place in the past 3 weeks. And we just don't know about it because there wasn't that one reporter who was there. And we don't know about, and there's no reason for a reporter to be there if a woman shows up in Ohio with an ectopic pregnancy and she can't get treatment because the doctor is like, I'm not going to risk going to jail. I'm not going to risk getting a fine wherever it was in the country. And there's no reason for a reporter to know that story. I mean,
right.
The first thing you do when you have an ectopic pregnancy and your life is in danger, or maybe you pass away, you're not necessarily going to, there's nobody there going to go and try and get a reporter to talk about this. And maybe the doctors aren't saying anything. I just want to read this quote from Glenn Kessler, who was, the fact checker from the Post. And this quote, I think, comes from a Neiman Labs interview. I'm not quite sure where they got the quote from. I'm pretty sure it was direct. An abortion by a 10-year-old is pretty rare. And we should say abortions by 10-year-olds are completely rare because
I hope so. Yeah.
There's no 10-year-old in the country who has the
Doogie Howser was not doing
right. Exactly. Yeah. And then another quote, the Columbus Dispatch reported in 2020, 52 people under the age of 15 received an abortion in Ohio. So even if we just cut him some slack on his getting the wrong sort of verb, I guess, wrong in that. How is the idea of a 10-year-old getting an abortion rare if we're talking at least four people a month on average under the age of 15 receive abortions in Ohio?
In one state. Yeah, it's not that common. It's just once a week here in Ohio.
Well, that's...
It's absurd.
I mean, exactly.
What would count as... something happening frequently for him if once a week it doesn't count.
The point is that there's no bar. it's just there to downplay their theocracy.
I want to touch on one more thing too, and just on this broader theme of that I think it's going to become clear, it seems to me, that ultimately what we've been watching from the biggest voting bloc in the Republican Party, I think 50% of Trump's votes came from self-identified evangelical Christians, more or less 50%. They've been lying about their agenda from the get-go. And I think we're going to start to see more of examples of this. This is completely far afield. Happens to include Eric Swalwell again. Swalwell apparently is taking some type of trip. I don't know where he's going. Not relevant to this, but it is somewhere ostensibly in his business as a congressman. He went and got tried to get a declaratory ruling, I guess, as to whether he could use campaign funds to provide for a babysitter for the week that he was leaving town, which is exactly what we want our lawmakers to do. Is it okay for me to use the funds in this instance? Goes to the FEC. Put aside what their ruling is. I don't even know what they decided in terms of whether that's appropriate or not. One of the commissioners, a guy named James Traynor, self-IDs as a conservative Catholic. He was the former chair of the FEC. He's now just a commissioner. Here is his response to this, looking for this declaratory ruling. It's fascinating.
Say with regard to this issue, and I do see this as nothing more than a member of Congress looking for a way to have donors pay for nanny services while they run off on week-long trips overseas. And to be real honest with you, I'm actually going to pass judgment on it. I think it's abhorrent that Congressman Swalwell would have such a young child and want to leave them in the care of someone else for a week-long trip overseas, and using donor contributions to pay for that. I think it's just inappropriate that we've even had to address this question.
Mr. Ricard, though I'm getting close to cutting this off, it's somewhat outside of the motion.
And that is why I'm aghast, because I think the comment is outside of the AO request. I think it puts us in concern about consideration for other matters. That's not appropriate for what we're doing here now. I can respectfully understand if someone does not agree with the draft mental unit. I understand your reasoning.
We can stop it there, right? Because the question isn't whether campaign donations should go towards that. I don't know. I'm agnostic on that question. I would hear the arguments. But the idea that a government official is passing judgment on Swalwell for getting a babysitter for a week when he's out of town, like, this is all part of the whole thing, right?
Where's his wife? She should be at home with the children babysitting, right? And it's a moral failing if that's not the case.
Yes, this idea that, like, people have always had moral condemnations of other people, but the idea that we have to hear from that guy and that his moral attitudes towards somebody else's trip affects public policy is theocratic. Like, that's the definition of it. Like, you can have your opinion. Look, you don't think Eric Swalwell should go to Bali for the week on this government trip? Fine, go ahead, hate him. That's what comment sections are for.
Right. Like,
sound off. But that you're then going to pass laws and pass rules because of your attitude. And I think to your point about the media being completely unprepared or set up, in the worst possible way for this moment is a good one. And because, like you said, it's like how are you going to find these cases? The only way you're going to find these cases is if the abortion care provider provides them to the media, which is precisely why Indiana is now investigating her, to send a signal to all the other ones that we don't want to hear from you. You do your work quietly and maybe we'll let you stay in business. So I think the main way our main source of news for these tragedies over the next several years is going to be GoFundMe, because you're going to that's where you're going to learn. It's going to be Facebook posts that wind up on GoFundMe, and you will hear, you know, about somebody's wife who died because of X, Y, and Z, and people will start donating. The right will start saying, "I'm sure this is all made up," and then you might start getting some journalism done on that particular case. But it'll turn up in GoFundMe first as a plea for help for a family who now doesn't have a mother anymore because of lack of medical care in a crucial moment that would have saved her life.
And the whole GoFundMe thing, like, there's a larger dystopian dynamic of how you can see these GoFundMe posts for regular medical expenses. You know, I have a cancer treatment and we need $100,000 to pay for it and to save my father's life or my uncle or whatever. Like, those are already such massive condemnations of our healthcare system that it just brings to mind when you say that. Some of my frustrations with how the Democrats have been combating the overturning of Roe v. Wade, or really combating is maybe too strong of a word, where, you know, they're still connecting it to this larger notion of medical privacy. Everyone should be able to have a private medical decision that they can make about their own body. And, like, I understand that from the jurisprudence perspective, like, that's where they need to hang their hat. But from a political perspective, the fact that the Biden administration doesn't have any healthcare narrative and any emphasis, I think really undercuts their potential messaging and the on abortion more broadly as a right to healthcare in general. Because when you make it about privacy, I think the message is muddled in a variety of different ways.
I wonder, there might be some gains to be made there, but in general, I think the people who are supportive of healthcare for everybody are also supportive of abortion rights. We actually interviewed a woman from Kansas this morning who said that medical, you know, bodily autonomy, anti-mandates, and medical freedom are the words that are really resonating, or the concepts that are really resonating with the kind of libertarian and conservative voters that they're going to need in Kansas to move beyond. Because they've got a block of Democrats and progressives and supporters of abortion rights in Kansas who are going to vote no on this amendment to ban abortion in Kansas. Like they have those. The question is, how do you get to 51%? And they're finding, and the one we talked to was, embrace this concept as well herself. There's a ton of vaccine skepticism out there, and they're using the vaccine skepticism and the skepticism of authority more generally, and the idea of medical freedom to point out, to make this case, like, you can't be for one and not for the other. And fascinatingly, it sounds like some of that is resonating in a real way among people, because you have to find, like, if you're going to get beyond your core group, you have to find arguments that are more appealing to them. And there might be some kind of social justice Catholics who might be persuaded by that language, but those social justice Catholics are so they're mostly pretty political and well informed anyway. So the idea that you're going to move them one way or another with some messaging is probably not the case.
Well, I mean, this is a little afield, I guess. But I mean, it raises an interesting question as to, like, you know, obviously the first order of business is try and provide for the material needs that are most at forefront right now, which is like just a rear guard action of trying to mitigate the implications of the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And you talk about medical freedom. I wonder if that makes it harder down the road to get a government-sponsored Medicare for All type of program where you have sort of played into this concept.
I think it actively does. And in fact, if you look at some of the kind of, I don't know what you want to call them, the YouTube left types that started getting into this medical freedom stuff so that they could kind of ride the anti-vax algorithmic boost that was going on for six months or so.
You don't say.
Those people started becoming actually a lot more skeptical of Medicare for All, even ones who had kind of made their entire political identity around the idea of fighting for Medicare for All. So I think that you're right, that the messaging around medical freedom undermines faith in public health, and then undermines faith in kind of universal healthcare. I think that's right. Now, the job of a Kansan who's trying to beat this amendment is to beat the amendment. So I'm not telling them what to do or what not to. But I think you're right that in general, the lack of trust in public health that was exacerbated during the pandemic has undermined potential future support for expanding public health insurance.
Yeah, that's a tough dilemma that I think maybe worthy of a different show. I mean, and that dilemma comes up many times, right? Like, you know, sometimes your top priority undercuts a longer term mm-hmm. priority, or let's say the most urgent priority maybe undercuts a longer term priority. I feel like we're going to be talking about this stuff and the expansion of the theocracy, because mm-hmm. I really do think the gloves are off for
they're targeting PrEP access in Texas.
PrEP access in Texas, you know, in terms of HIV, we saw it with Josh Hawley bringing in like, oh, I know we're talking about abortion, but let's get to the trans stuff right now too. Like it is all part of a whole.
And the fact that there are all these fentanyl test strips that people can use to find out whether or not the pill that they're about to take has been laced with fentanyl so that they don't die. You know, Republican states are trying to, and some are successfully banning people from obtaining a test strip that would save their life. For what? Like why? Like that's theocracy right there.
It's because they're sinning. Yeah. And God will decide whether they live or not, period, end of story. And if you're going to sin.
It's the same with the PrEP in a way, except it's even taken out of sex.
Yep. Yeah. It is all about a moral decision that is being made upon high and imposed. And now they have the mechanism to do it. And it's almost like once they got Roe v. Wade out of the way, they basically said, we did the biggie first.
Right.
Like, you know, we ate the main court. You know, we ate the steak. So like the rest is just like the peas and the mashed potatoes or the set, you know, like we're just, everything's going in now.
Right. Mop up time.
It's mop up time. And I think it's going to get super extreme. And it really does show how much lying was going on in the run up, you know, in the past 50 years about what the agenda really was. I mean, there are people have been writing about this. This doesn't have anything to do with innocent baby. This has to do with a religious policing of the sexual behavior of women, and from their perspective,
that's
the existence of trans people. I mean, all of it.
Right. That's what pregnancy, HIV, and a fentanyl overdose have in common to them. They're like, those are consequences of your sinning, and therefore mm-hmm. you need to bear the brunt of those. You need to suffer those consequences.
This is all theocracy there, but let's move for just a moment, since you are the DC bureau chief, to the news out of DC.
Huge news.
Joe Manchin, it's super surprising. Joe Manchin has killed his own proposal for tax, raising taxes on wealthy people, and his climate proposal. I understand that Joe Manchin's polling has gone through the roof because he's doing this stuff. And I understand you deal with the Senate that you're given. But at what point does the Democratic leadership take responsibility for not understanding what Joe Manchin has been doing since day one, or I would argue actually since closer to day 175 or 200, because I think Joe Manchin shifted gears at one point when he had his footing when Biden let those Republicans come in, and then they didn't do anything in June. And so he let Sinema and Portman came in, and it gave time for Joe Manchin to marshal his forces and get his support, get the advertising money he needed from No Labels, et cetera, et cetera. But he has played Schumer and Biden and, frankly, also Pelosi like a fiddle, it seems to me.
Yeah, and I think a mistake that they made early on when it comes to Manchin was not dealing better and harder with Sinema. Because Sinema actually set up a situation where that led to today in this way. When Sinema said, look, I'm not doing any increases in, you know, the marginal tax rates for the rich or marginal tax rates for corporations. Those numbers have to stay flat. Therefore, you have to go and find other revenue in the tax code because you can't do it the easy way. Like, we're going to move this number from 32 to 36. Like, that's how you do normal policy, because and it's fair. That hits everybody equally. When you have to go into the tax code and you have to then find like individual like revenue raisers, you wind up where we are today with the West Virginia Cattle Association, signing a letter saying that this particular pass-through tax change that is now in Build Back Better or was in Build Back Better to make up for what Sinema took out, that's going to kill us. You know, those West Virginia cattle folks are, you know, those are people that Manchin is listening to. And it's not just them, but when you start targeting these individual little industries, then you galvanize and unleash that entire industry to come at particular people that they can peel off, particular people like Manchin. And so that's one big mistake that they made. And now what they could have done with Sinema, whether she's just such a wild card that there's just nothing that would work, I don't know, but it doesn't seem like they've tried a whole lot with her. But once you set this situation up that you had to do different kinds of tax cuts, Manchin might not even have known. Like, Manchin might have said, yeah, sure, I'll do $300 billion and other tax increases. Just tell me what they are.
I want to tease this out so the people understand. Like, the idea of, like, Manchin wouldn't have known? Manchin only knows if somebody comes knocking on his door from West Virginia and says, hey, dude, I got a problem here, and you better deal with this because we gave you whatever it was, $45,000 last time, you know, to run, and we're hiring your daughter's kids and whatever, you know, God knows what's going on in West Virginia. But if nobody comes to complain to him, he doesn't care.
Right. No, exactly.
That's his way of saying there's no moneyed interest in West Virginia that I'm offending, and if I'm not offending any moneyed interest in West Virginia, I don't care. That's it. And you saw
McConnell knows it, because McConnell's smart. He, on the Senate floor, he gave this speech where he's like, Hey Joe, like, you tell the press you're okay with this pass through tax change that's going to raise all this money. How do you think, you know, most companies in West Virginia are set up? They're set up as pass throughs. But that was a couple days before this letter comes out from the West Virginia cattlemen, which I promise you the Republicans helped to organize, like, because that's how that works. Like, you go out and find your coalition partners and you tell them to sign. It's not just them, but these but other business associations who are like, hey, we're pass-throughs. And so finally he's like, you know what, I never wanted to do climate stuff. I love, you know, the fact that he got a second round of this where he gets to, like, put his thumb in the eye of Biden and Schumer and Pelosi again.
For him, it's like, this is worth another like 3 or 4 points, probably, he's thinking.
Yeah, Manchin, he waited just long enough for the last one to fade, and he kills the exact same thing again. Except it's not the exact same thing. Like you said, he proposed this. Like, this was his specific proposal. He's like, here are the things that I would do. This amount of tax increases in this way, half of it deficit reduction, drug pricing, climate. It's got to be energy funding across the board. It's his idea. And he killed his own idea. Yeah.
From your perspective, is this incompetence, or, like, I mean, is it possible that, like, Joe Biden didn't want to ever pass anything, didn't, you know, really want to maintain that pass-through tax or whatever it was. Or, I mean, like, it's literally just, it's almost, it's just embarrassing what they can't, yeah. what they cannot figure out what to do with Manchin and with Sinema. I mean, it's an embarrassment. Like, it's an embarrassment for them, it seems yeah. to me. Like, there's no, you know, this is such chump change stuff, you know, as it were, anyways. It seems like there is no way to communicate how incompetent the leadership has been since the day after passing the COVID relief in whatever it was, February.
Mm-hmm. Right. Certainly once they had that piece of paper from Manchin saying, like, here are the things I would support, you know, this would smarter play would be, okay, let's hurry up and get this done. You say they support this. However, here he is. He has publicly said many times that he supports the very thing that he just killed. An interesting question would be, what if Harry Reid didn't get cancer? What if Harry Reid, you know, ran again for re-election in 2016 and won and was alive and was the majority leader? You know, Harry Reid was maybe since Johnson or maybe better than Johnson when it comes to just the tactics of building coalitions and getting legislation through the Senate and meeting the needs of members where they were. Now, when he left, Reid and Manchin were not on speaking terms anymore. Like, Reid hated him that much. So maybe, you know, forget about it. Now, maybe Reid, you know, there's so many maybes. The 2016 right. elections should have gone differently. But for Comey and that 2 points, you know, you probably have, you know, Ron Johnson's back in the private sector and you've got Russ Feingold in that seat. You know, they should have had Joe Sestak or Fetterman, or Katie McGinty could have won, you know, should have won that seat. In Missouri, Jason Kander lost by 2 points, but all the polling, you know, showed him just about, you know, ahead, you know, going into that final race. And then you had that weird tick at the very end. So that, you know, that changes things. Schumer with 53, does he get it done? Maybe. And so I think that, I don't think it's as simple as saying that Democrats do all this on purpose. That'd be like the other way. If you like the pass-through tax system as it is, the other way to keep it that way is just to not propose changing it.
Like, there's right. not a whole lot, like, it's not like
a whole lot of value. Of,
right. Like, there's, that's the thing that gets me so frustrated. It's like, where's the value in pretending that you can't even get this done? Like,
it doesn't help
who,
you.
Who is the person going around saying, like,
well, at least they said they
gave it the old college try, you yes. know, like, no, you know,
nobody,
like all those people who would say that 6 months ago would have been like, we can't do anything anyways because of Manchin, period, end of story. Like, they keep right. trying, and they, you know, I've said this a million times on this program that my 6 years or 5 years at Air America and with six different leaderships. I think we had six CEOs in 5 years and five owners in 5 years. The various forms of incompetence that I witnessed there, where each one was like, what? How? Oh my God, how could they do this again? And it has that feeling of like, and also at any time, there was five different times probably over those 5 years where they could have completely turned it around. And I feel like we could go back, we could go before 2016 and just go to like, all right, President Obama, they're not going to confirm. They're not even going to have hearings for Merrick Garland. So let's parade through seven other people. Let's hit every single demographic in the country. You know, let them not have a hearing for a black woman. Let them not have a hearing for, you know, an Asian Pacific woman and a Latino woman and then a Latino man and you could just keep going through and just help 12 different organizations organize to get people out to vote and make up those 60,000 votes over the course of three states. But they didn't bother doing that either. And instead, you just had all the benefit for that seat being open, going to Mitch McConnell and to Donald Trump, so that they could bring us to what we were talking about in the first half of the program.
Also, you know, they were okay losing the Senate in 2014, like the White House was, because they were so frustrated with Harry Reid. Like, they were like sick of like him embarrassing them publicly and fighting with them all the time. You know, they not seeing the Merrick Garland thing coming. I mean, you could talk to a legal expert about this, but you know, they confirmed Ketanji Brown Jackson before Breyer was off the court. Right. He announced he was leaving.
I was asking about this many times and nobody could give me an answer.
What if they confirmed Merrick Garland after the lame duck in 2014 and just said, look, we don't know what's going to happen, but
he's next in the hopper.
Is music to Sam's ears, because you've been banging this drum about,
I was
like
asking this like many, many times. Like,
I mean,
what?
But this is an administration that is uninterested in packing the court, in addressing judicial review, and like that would be far down their list, in my opinion, in terms of things they try.
Oh, without a doubt. Like, but right now, I would do six Supreme Court justices.
Yeah, nominate six. Nominate nine, because, you know, hey, who knows?
I mean, I think, I don't know who we asked about this question, and it had something to do with like putting in the resignation or something, or anticipating, and you know, I don't know. But I guess what it would be is this, is that theoretically, in the lame duck session, they could pass it, but then maybe the Senate could do a revote. When Mitch McConnell takes over, the Senate could do a revote and say, we vote now to strike his confirmation down.
They could.
I mean, I think that's really what would happen in that instance.
Right.
But yes. So there's a lot of different screw ups that have led us to this point. With all that said, let's just do this in 2 minutes. I'm sorry, we're running late. Where is your sense, to the extent that you've talked to reporters who are out there sort of like taking the pulse of these things? Because I'm starting to see like these stories that where people seem to be pulling back from the Democratic nightmare scenario. I don't want to get anybody's hopes up, but I'm reading stories like there's only 30 swing districts in the country in the House now. So it can't be a landslide. Or if you look at the polling when, abortion comes into play, things change in the 19th district in New York, let's say, which is a 4.5, +5 Biden district on an election year, but off year, a very different thing. What is your sense of like what people are starting to think in terms of both the Senate and the House?
There's still a sense among people that Republicans are going to take over, but it does seem like that there's a little bit less confidence in the extent of it. Maybe a month or two ago, the question was like how bad the blowout was going to be. But now I think the conventional wisdom is more like they've probably got it, but we'll see, because the Supreme Court really scrambles the question of out party and motivation to vote in a way that we don't have any record for. Like, there's nothing to compare this to.
And if Donald Trump jumps in, if Donald Trump declares in September, as he's sort of threatening to do, that also is going to change things. I wonder on the Senate side, is it the same way?
The Senate, because they're confident in a lot of these races are going. Ron Johnson is unpopular. Herschel Walker in Georgia.
Dr. Oz.
Mark
Kelly.
We got
to play that Snooki thing a little bit later.
Snook is out. You know, for Fetterman, Mark Kelly's popular in Arizona, despite the best efforts of Sinema to paint him as a left-wing
right. And
radical.
Blake Masters looks like he is set to maybe win there, and that's going to help Mark Kelly quite a bit too.
Probably, yeah, right. Because
Masters is not the guy you want if abortion is, people care about abortion.
Right, right. So yeah, New Hampshire's tough, but yes, people are a little more confident about holding the Senate for Democrats than the House. But even I think people aren't betting their lives anymore on what's going to happen in November. Well, whereas before it seemed pretty open and shut.
Ryan, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for, you know, doing your hair up for us too.
You got it.
Appreciate
got
it. You don't always get.
Well, he has that glam squad.
Put that on.
I did Rising one time. Do they still do your makeup for you and all that stuff?
They do. They do.
I mean, I did it a few times, but in studio, like, I was like, oh my goodness, I wish I had this every day.
Fancy schmancy.
I wasn't in studio today, but yeah, they take good care of you.
Thanks for wearing the suit.
Really, they have their work cut out for them. Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
All right. Ryan Grimm, everybody. Check out The Intercept, obviously. Oh, we didn't even get you guys had a pretty blockbuster story about the Secret Service.
Check that one out.
Deleting their things and now there is now there's a Metro cop who is corroborating, at least you know, we can hear the secondhand. Those Secret Service guys, really, really crack organization there in terms of like smuggling the Constitution.
And they said that they were going to testify on the record that Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony was false. So let's like call them to that. I would love to see these Secret Service agents on the stand to explain why their text messages are all deleted.
Any day
that.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Ryan Grimm, thanks again. All right, folks, we got to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Matthew Film Guy.
Freestyle over that.
It is Matthew, a film guy, as denoted by his theme song, is joining us. Matthew, will you indulge me one moment? There's just There's two IMs that I have to address. Jen Hexer says, at what point does somebody get match in a psych evaluation? Like, what's with the massive opinion shifts? People need to understand that Manchin is setting up, when he says, we'll do this tax thing and this and that, he's setting up a tin can for him to knock it back down. And when he does, he gets an extra 3 points because West Virginia, they like the fact that he sticks his finger in the eyes of the Democrats. And Really Cool says Manchin's day one was when he shot at the ACA with his rifle, as I remember it. No, that ad was him shooting at Cap and Trade.
Cap and Trade.
So, Matthew Film Guy.
Yes, Sam Cedar. Hello.
Forgive me. I just, the Manchin stuff just, God.
Oh, no, I'm with you. He's the only guy who wants a lump of coal in his Christmas stocking. I fucking hate that guy.
Well done. Well
Thank
done.
You. You can use that. You can use that.
You're going to say hi to Emma or no? You just
no. Hi, Emma. We're in a fight. Hi.
No,
hi, Matthew.
Not
you
at all.
You guys having a fight?
We already talked pre-song, so I figured that was...
No, I thought I'd, you know, try a bit.
You want to raise your Q rating by starting a beef with Matthew Film Guy? That's a great idea.
That actually is a good idea.
Honestly, I need to get into some more online fights, just like for the clout.
Because you will waste me, so that's a good pick a puny target. Actually,
you'll deep six her over at, what is it, Boxed, or what is it?
Letterboxd.
Yeah. That's where all of Matthew's films are rated, at Letterboxd.
Actually, I was going to maybe hold on to this, but since you brought it up, you can go look at my recent diary on letterbox.com. I'm Langdon Boom or Matthew Film Guy. And you will see that finally, Mary got me to watch Mean Girls. Yes, that was this week. And I have to say, I quite enjoyed it.
You can't sit with us.
It ages really well, right? I mean,
having never seen it, I can't speak to the agingness, although I could tell you that I heard two or three things that already made it into the cultural zeitgeist enough that it reached me.
Well,
so
it came out in 2003, I think, right?
If I'm yeah. What was Mean Girls about again now?
Mean Girls.
Girls, you mean?
It was TFA's take on high school sort of cliques.
So the way that The Breakfast Club was like the defining movement or movie for that generation. Mean Girls, I mean, and again, I'm just saying like for white kids. Mean Girls was like, I think for the most part, that movie.
It's like maybe my favorite movie, potentially.
Well, and they filmed it at Montclair High School, which was the town that, you know, adjacent to where I grew up in. I used to say I was from Montclair, even though I was from a smaller town right next to Montclair. They filmed it there, and all that, you know, Lindsay Lohan was at her peak. It's a great movie. Great movie.
And honestly, I didn't realize it was such an SNL kind of production. So, you know, Lorne Michaels produced it and Tina Fey wrote it. And I'm not sure if she also directed it, but you got, you know, half the cast of SNL at the time are in it.
Tim Meadows, Amy Poehler. Yeah.
Rachel McAdams before The Notebook.
Yes.
Amanda Seyfried before she was Elizabeth Holmes. So.
And actually, you know, Sam, I was reminded a lot in a weird way of Who's the Caboose during it, because it's another one of these movies. It's an entry in the whole idea of people are liars and they lie to present themselves in a certain way. And all the humor is based on that. And nobody's quite clean. Like everybody's somewhat compromised in that way. So I think you would actually really enjoy it. You'd get something out of it. It's not just the throwaway teeny bopper kind of comedy.
I had no idea, but that was
like it's
the
not that great, but it was
that was cool. That was the Who's the Caboose thing. I used to describe it as like one person's sort of lies meets another person's lies, and they just have a relationship, and the people just sort of stand out of the outside.
Yes, that's you could use that for Mean Girls. I really do think. Don't you think, Emma?
I think he'd really enjoy it, like a lot.
Legitimately biting. Like it's actually genuinely like biting and incisive movie.
Well, I'm just.
Would Saul enjoy this at this point, or is it?
I mean,
yeah, maybe. But is he? He's 9, 8. How old?
Yeah,
he's 9 like plus change.
Yeah.
We just watched The Revenant. He and I, and no.
I was going to say, he'll be fine.
No, Benjamin was like, you should watch the, you know, like.
That's the bear fucking one. I haven't seen it.
And I watched it one night, and I texted
on your TV?
Next, yeah.
It's just like not even worth it then,
I watched it one night and just texted him the next morning. Saul loved it. And he's like, what?
Because I saw it in theaters. That was like when I was
good
like single
sure.
and sad, and I went to the movie theater by myself, and I watched that by myself, and it was not like I appreciate the artistry of it, and they use all natural light apparently for the way that it was shot, which is interesting, but like I don't remember anything about it. Tom Hardy's inscrutable. I didn't understand a word anybody was saying.
Yeah, it's kind of like a dumb guy smart movie, but like that's kind of why it was fun in the theaters.
Yeah,
just
right.
for the prospects and like right. the spectacles.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Nah, I didn't see that one.
Okay.
Mean Girls though for Saul. Maybe that's what we'll watch
Saul,
tonight.
I can't imagine Myla hasn't seen it already.
I'd be very happy.
I would be shocked if Myla hasn't seen it, but you know, she's watched like now she's just gone through every episode of Law and Order from the day that it was made and every derivation of it.
Wow.
That's her big thing.
It was such a Mean Girls was such a phenomenon for my generation that when I went to camp, there was like a whole day that was themed after it, where we watched the movie and we did trust falls and like we talked about our like, you know, lives and stuff like that. That's how big of a deal that movie was.
Uchi Wally wants you to know that Emma, 48-year-old black men approve of Mean Girls.
I just wanted to like give a caveat and not be a dick because like of a movie that is definitely, you know, more about my like suburban white existence and not saying it was a universal.
It was one of the white
thing.
Canon films.
Yes.
Well, Mary had been working on me to see it for a long time too, so we finally watched it this weekend or this past weekend. It was excellent. good Hollywood entertainment.
So, Matthew, film guy, what is the latest with your burgeoning career? You finished the last film.
Still burgeoning. That's good news.
That's important.
It hasn't stopped burgeoning. When it stops burgeoning, then you have to worry. I'm doing actually an interview after this for another film, hopefully. I finally read a script that I really liked, and so we're doing a meeting. And, you know, I keep getting sent stuff, and I'm looking for the next right thing, and trying to be a little choosy, but, you know, it is what it is in this business. So, but keep your fingers crossed for this one. And, you know, Abandon's still out there doing its thing in the world. And meanwhile, I'm, you know, teaching my class, which keeps me, you know.
Now, where is Abandon? Where is it at this juncture?
Video on demand.
It is.
I think in the fall, I've heard rumors. I'm not necessarily plugged in, but I think it's going to be out on Hulu or some other streaming platform. I think Hulu in the fall for like Halloween-y times. But if you don't want to wait, you can go check it out, Video on Demand.
What? Now, remind everybody what that is.
It's a horror movie that I edited last fall with featuring Emma Roberts and John Gallagher Jr. and Michael Shannon. Directed by Spencer Squire, a first-time director who was a really amazing gem to work with. And we had some drama going into it, and you can check past episodes for more details on that drama. But it came out, and like it's like what a wonderful thing when a movie you work on actually comes out in this business. So Emma Roberts is out there promoting it, or she was up until maybe a week ago. And so go check it out. It's a horror movie, if you like that.
It's a horror movie, but it was sort of.
It's like a drama.
It was such a lovely house. That was the part that was so upsetting.
Isn't it? Did you hate it when the lovely house is? But that's how you
it's
get a deal.
Such a lovely, like, country house.
Yeah. But that's why, you know, you got to look for bargains. And that's what happens.
Well, yeah, that cuts both ways. Why is it such a good bargain? Well, maybe because there's something horrible that is going on.
Something really horrible. You got to figure at this point something horrible happened in every house, though. So really, you're just knowing about it.
Well, that's true. But if the house is older, the odds of it something horrible happening go up.
Yes, that's the Cedar scale.
Remember the apartment that we shot a bad situationist in? That apartment, I had to light sage in it because the guy had died in the tub.
Oh, wow.
Before I moved in.
Oh, I thought you were going to say.
That's why I got such a deal.
I thought what you were going to say was what we did was what bad happened in it.
Well, that was also pretty bad. That was there was a lot of.
What?
Well, we just shot this whole thing, but a lot of people.
And you had to do like secret renovations without your board knowing. Can we say that now? Can we talk about
yes.
That?
The truth is that Ross Broccoli and I did demo in the apartment and then smuggled all the garbage out at 3 a.m. in file boxes. Like over the course of 3 weeks, we would just find dumpsters or we would just leave it on the corner at the near trash can.
That's not an endorsement of doing your own demo in your co-op, but
that's right.
That is what happened.
But drywall can break into pretty small pieces if you need to. Let's just put it that way. So, Matthew, film guy, the Learning Annex courses have been happening online. I've gotten rave reviews from family members who have participated.
The summer session's actually starting right now. It's going to be on Tuesday, and it's only a short session for 4 classes. So if you ever wanted to just dip your toe in and see what it was like, come and join us. You can go to my Twitter at Langdon Boom, and the pinned tweet is where to sign up for that. And you watch a movie on a link, and then on Tuesday we meet for 2 hours at noon on Zoom and have a great discussion with a bunch of very intelligent film lovers.
And if you miss it, can you play the recording of the Zoom later?
No, we decided not to do that. People sometimes don't feel like they want to be recorded. So decided not to do that. But so be there or be square. But starting up next Tuesday for 4 sessions. So that's been a lot of fun.
And you do it at noon?
Yeah, noon Eastern time. Because it did start out originally as like a retired person's class. Since we did Zoom, it's become a much more diverse group of people from all over the world. So it's various time zones, various countries. We got people from Zurich. We got people from Sweden.
You understand, though, that at noon you're competing against another show.
I don't know which. Nothing that really should make a difference. What?
Jeez, talk about biting the hand that feeds you. That's what's.
I mean, you miss one show, you're just going to say the same stuff the next day. So, like, really, what's the big deal?
Well, now we know why the numbers are soft on Tuesdays.
Oh, wow. What a compliment. Thank you.
Matthew,
want,
film
it to Thursday.
What's that?
Said if you want, I'll switch it to Thursday.
Whoa.
What?
You didn't pick that up on that?
That's yeah, I kept. Did. Thursday. No. Oh, damn it. Damn it.
I'm trying to start this with your Q rating.
All right, so let's get to the tchotchke sales before we get to your film.
Now wait a minute. It's not a tchotchke. This is a piece of original, extremely unique artwork, which if you recall, you have a copy of somewhere.
It's hung up right up there. Right up there.
Can we make Sam's camera go crazy again? And no, it's okay. You don't have to do that.
Honestly, maybe.
I can do that.
I could do it.
Hold on.
No, I have a better angle, Sam, right? Because I'm right here.
All right. Go ahead.
This is really going to raise the value. But it, just to explain, this was originally a piece of artwork I made to give to you, Sam, as part of the live show when it was in Brooklyn.
I mean, that's the opposite way.
Yeah, I'll just keep filling time. They wound up misprinting a couple. What the? I had like an extra copy that was just ever so slightly. Oh, that's awesome. I thought I was going to go in the bathroom. That's even better. What a wonderful place for that. So that's the original. At the show, I had everybody sign it, and I was going to give it out as like a door prize, but we only got one person to claim one. So there's only three of these in all of existence, and two are autographed. And this one, you know, I just unfortunately can't give it the home that it deserves. So if you're willing to cover the shipping costs and whatever, you know, between you all, you decide it's worth, it's now for sale on my eBay page. So you can all go there also on my Twitter at Langdon Boom and see if you want that and give it a nice home.
Who signed that? That is an extended signature thing, right?
I mean, yes, it is the core MR crew currently, which is you, Emma, and Matt Leck. But it also has, and Bradley, and it also has Matt Binder. And
I signed it, Matthew?
Yes.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, cool.
You were so wasted that day. I know. You can't remember.
Who was?
Matt Binder.
Matt Binder and Bradley. I mean, and Brandon.
Brandon, right.
So, and if you want, it's not currently signed by me, but if you would want, I didn't want to ruin it by doing that presumptively, I would sign it as well. But you could have it with or without.
I'm trying to get it back.
This is like, we're doing like a Michael Snow movie at the same time as the show.
So I'm sorry.
This is great.
Oh,
Thank you. Thank you for going out of your comfort
zone. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. We just...
That was honestly perfectly done by me.
It was.
All right. So, Matthew, let's get to it.
What else?
What are we going to hear from you in terms of what we should be streaming this weekend or, frankly, over the course of the next week?
Well, if you recall last time, I kind of went kind of heavy on the art film beat, really questioning the role of art in society and what it could actually do to change our lives or even our internal consciousnesses. Mm-hmm. But that was before I went to Disney World for a week.
Did you go to Disney for a week?
Yeah, it was my mother's 70th birthday. And
we
did.
You wanted to give me your guide to doing it. And actually, I went through... And I got like re-brainwashed by the Star Wars rides. Like they were like,
wait, we talked about him going or that he'd already been.
I was about.
He was
to
on
go.
His way. He was
oh, okay,
going.
No, yeah. So we haven't talked about you actually
having
been
there. No. But so all that got counterbalanced by being heavily, heavily ensconced in the Disney World. Did you go on that Star Wars rise of the with like five different stages and like actors? Or I mean,
that was pretty impressive.
It was really impressive. I mean, we're getting like Westworld almost level like in entertainment. And it's like, is this where movies are going? In a way, yes. That's they're meeting in the middle. But having said that, it didn't completely rewire my brain to the joys of the commercial cinema. But, you know, I did watch Mean Girls. I had this other film that I've had wanted to see for a while. That's by a Taiwanese filmmaker whose most of his body of work is some, I would say, pretty heavy, either historical, political, but also in that kind of deep sort of esoteric filmmaking language kind of way, story content. And his name is Hu Xiaoshen. I may have mentioned some of his movies on the show before.
Yeah, I think you have, Matthew, actually.
Yeah, Flowers of Shanghai is one of my all-time favorites. It's like mostly just like one-take shot scenes with fades in between where they're just sort of panning in between the actors, and it's sort of a period piece. So this is sort of in that mold where he does a lot of period pieces. He also does films on the historical sort of conflict of Taiwan, his native country, and some of them are current, some of them are more, you know, like pre-modern times, some of them are only around the original sort of conflagration. But this one he did was sort of like what you might call a wushu movie, like a, you know, a samurai, but not samurai, it's in Chinese, like a kind of a kung fu type movie, his take on such a thing, and it's called The Assassin. And it actually is pretty interesting. It does have some of the sort of sword fighting and flying people. You may have seen it in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, but it still has that kind of ambient narrative sense, the kind of long takes and the sort of vibrational frequency where you really have to kind of lean forward to be absorbed in the action. You're not given a lot of like chop socky kind of action. So it's not quite that kind of action movie, but it's his take on it. And I highly recommend that one, The Assassin.
The Assassin. Okay.
By Hu Xiaoshen. And then I would be remiss if I didn't say that our class recently watched one of the few Yasujirō Ozu movies, a Japanese filmmaker who's one of my all-time favorites, that I hadn't seen. And it actually, it was sort of oddly sort of topical in that it depicts, for part of the story, a woman's decision to have an abortion in, you know, post-war Japan. And it's very, very interesting just to see that section of it. And it's not the entirety of the film, but Tokyo Twilight is another one that I want to blast out there for people to go and see. It's sort of one of his more, I would say, somber movies. He does a lot of sort of domestic dramas mostly. You might have seen Tokyo Story or Flavor of Green Tea Over Rice, Late Summer, ones like that. But Tokyo Twilight gets kind of short shrift in his sort of oeuvre, and I'd say it's really, really worthy film, and it's out there on the Criterion Channel, I believe.
Is Floating Weeds Ozu also Matthew?
Floating Weeds may be my favorite Ozu, about the group of actors and the guy who may or may not be the father of that child. Yes, that's a great one. That one's in color, too. He does some movies in color towards the end of his career. Tokyo Twilight's black and white, but don't let that stop you. It's also in Japanese, but don't let that stop you.
Well, two good choices today. I think I might be able to check out The Assassin. Is that one that Saul would like?
Nah, I don't think you're going to check that one out. I don't think so. But, I mean, yeah, give it a shot for sure. But
Mean Girls, you also sort of, also.
I definitely endorse Mean Girls.
Recommended Mean Girls, so we can check out Mean Girls, and maybe I'll watch Assassin on my own.
It's PG-13, just you would... up.
Assassins?
No.
Oh.
Actually, I don't know what the rating is on The Assassin. It's about a female assassin who goes back to her old town to may or may not have to kill her old fiancé.
Ugh, everything's so woke now.
Yeah,
God.
I know.
Ugh.
Feudal China was so
can't
woke.
Can't enjoy right. movies anymore because all the assassins now, they're not white
I know.
Guys.
Yeah.
I know. Like, how can I? Yeah, I know.
Nevertheless.
I know. You persist.
Exactly. Matthew Film Guy, always a pleasure. Folks, we will put a link to Matthew's eBay page so that you can bid on the one of three prints and only one of two with signatures in the world.
Whoa.
Thank you for that, Sam. And also, please, my class link, see if anybody wants to jump on by Tuesday. Still time to get the movie and join us on Tuesday for that chat.
All right. Matthew Film Guy, thank you.
Thanks,
so much.
Emma. Thanks, Sam.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye, Matt.
All right, folks. We're going to head into the fun half. 646-257-3920 is the number. Not sure what's happening on Left Reckoning or in the Matt Leck Media Universe, but you can always check that out. They got a lot of stuff up there.
I think Kowalski gave us an update. They had Marcus from Left Flank Bets on Wednesday, so check that out if you guys have a second to.
Don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. And like our YouTube stream. Subscribe if you're not already subscribed. I think everybody who watches the live show is already subscribed. But give us some subscriptions on Twitch. Poggers. Let's get a hype train going. Damn, y'all. Choo-choo. Let's get a hype train. Level 5. Let's take this baby all the way up to level 5 hype train. 646-257-3920 is the number. I'm not sure how much time we're going to have for phone calls. Always caveat caller on Fridays, without a doubt. See you in the fun half. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18